Members of Congress, I now have the high privilege and distinct honor of presenting to you His Excellency Benjamin Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel.
Sandy Rios, just keep that under there while I talk for a second. That's how it sounded earlier in the week when Benjamin Netanyahu was greeted by the joint session of Congress. But it's maybe not quite what it sounds like because Kamala Harris refused to come in and preside. That is her job as the vice president to preside over a joint session of Congress, but she refused to come. She went to a black sorority to speak somewhere, I think, in Indiana. So she wasn't there. The president of the United States was not there. We're not sure where he is and what he's doing. And so Ben Cardin, who's getting ready to leave office, acted as speaker pro tem, second to the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson. About half the Democrats did not come, and the others were very interesting in their response. And I'm going to talk you through this. What I want to do today is I'm actually going to play you the entire speech of Bibi Netanyahu. It was jaw-droppingly great. And I want you to hear what he had to say. You're going to hear, you won't hear much of the response in the crowd, but I'm going to tell you a little bit about it. You can imagine it while you're listening to him. Trust me, you will not be bored. And when we get to the end of it, there is a lot to say about what was happening while he was speaking, a lot of things outside and in other areas. We'll talk about that briefly also. So this will be a full show, but trust me, it will be worth it. And the problem is, you know, it takes a lot of time to listen to these kinds of presentations. And honestly, I believe it's important that you hear them. So that's why I listened. I loved it, took notes, and now I want to play it for you. You can listen while you're in your kitchen or, you know, listen while you're in your car. But this way you will know, you know, no one is actually telling you what to think. You can hear Benjamin Netanyahu and make up your own mind. But first, before I get into this, this is, of course, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. You know, you can call us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can write us, and we do read everything you send. Sandy@AFR.net. That's Sandy@AFR.net. You can listen to the podcast on your favorite podcast platform, if it's Amazon or Spotify or Apple, or you fill in the blank. Or, of course, you can listen at our home base, which is AFR.net. AFR.net. They would do that online. You can also go to sandyrios.com. That's my website, and find it very easily. And just whatever habit you get into, just develop a nice habit and share about the show with your friends if you would. If you feel like this is beneficial, boy, this would be a great one to share so that people can hear Bibi Netanyahu speak and kind of know what the truth of things is. Well, you know, we're in a real transition. It's a strange time. We really don't have anyone leading us. They're placing Kamala there to assure us that there's leadership. But we'll get into Kamala's record and her abilities at a later time. But I think most of you that have been following it understand that she's not quite capable herself. That's just strange. When Bibi Netanyahu landed and came down from the plane, there was no one to greet him, no one official. No president, no vice president. He's a state leader of an ally. A secretary of state. We are leaderless right now. And so I emphasize to you that when this new leadership, though, does come, if we can survive till January, if it is Kamala, what you have to understand is that group of people want abortion for all 9 months. Kamala has been a nightmare in California on this issue. And Joe Biden has been a nightmare since he's been serving on this issue. They actually want to pass legislation in Congress to legalize abortion for all 9 months. This is what our future is. If Kamala is elected, if she's a candidate, and all of that. There's so much uncertainty, but for certain, we know that's how they feel. And that's why we kind of have to go around them and appeal to the moms who are in crisis pregnancy and talk to them about their babies and show them the pictures of them in utero. And that you know, no legislation can stop a mom. A mom is the heart of all of this. It's her decision whether she ends the life of that baby or not. So if we can reach them, more than half of them decide not to terminate the life of their baby. So that all takes place because of the work of preborn providing the ultrasounds. And that all takes place because of you helping preborn provide the ultrasounds. So if you would like to help, I hope you will generously go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. When we start the show officially, we're going to hear, the first thing you're going to hear is Benjamin Netanyahu. So I just want to give you kind of some background. You know, he came in from the back, as they always do, and he's making his way, you know, up the aisle. And it's just, I love this part. I always watch this because I know a lot of the people, not personally, although I do that too, but I know who they are and how they're responding. So one interesting thing is he was coming down the aisle toward the front. Chuck Schumer was sitting there, and now it's kind of in dispute, but I watched it like three times. It seems to me that Benjamin Netanyahu just glanced and gave a small nod. That was it. He didn't stop, extend his hand, and of course, I guess Schumer, others are saying Schumer didn't extend his hand, but I took it as kind of a statement from Bibi Netanyahu. I'm not shaking your hand. That's how I felt about that. But anyway, doesn't matter how I felt, that's how I saw it. All right, so the Democrats, for the most part, sat. The Black Caucus sat. They weren't having it. There may have been some exceptions to it, maybe when he entered the room, but for the most part, they were not joining in. They cheered repeatedly, thundering applause, and of course, a lot of that came from the Republicans. Some of the highlights of what you're going to hear Bibi say, or Benjamin Netanyahu, is, this is a war between barbarism and civilization. And interestingly enough, while he's making that speech, the Hamas supporters are in the Watergate Hotel unleashing maggots and crickets and all kinds of vermin in the quarters where Netanyahu and the Israeli delegation is staying. There are pictures all over their table where their food was. In their room, that's what they were doing. And there's a video. They posted a video. They were so proud of it. You know, Arabic music and speaking in their language, really happy and very proud. And the irony of it is it was the Secret Service who was in charge of guarding Benjamin Netanyahu. So there's that. So he's speaking. He gives an account of October 7th. Rashida Tlaib sits there and holds up this sign that says, "War Criminal." And then she has another side to it too, sign to it too. So she was sitting right there, refusing to stand for anything. Remember, Rashida's Palestinian. Oh, that's not an excuse. That's just an explanation. So one last thing. As when he concluded his speech, interestingly enough, John Fetterman, the guy who was seemed like such a doofus to begin with, the Democrat that probably should not have been elected, that the Democrats made sure that he got through, just this big guy who'd had this stroke and could hardly speak and was, from all accounts, quite far on the left. Well, whatever's happened to him has changed him, because he stood down at the front, came down, and went out of his way to extend his hand to Benjamin Netanyahu. So those are my observations. All those things were happening. So I hope that you will. Now sit back, relax, you know, put your feet up and drink your favorite beverage, or continue your work or drive in your car, but you have to hear this. You don't have to. It's not a punishment. It's a privilege. It's inspiring. The Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, on this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say, this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, Senator Ben Cardin, Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Senators, members of Congress, distinguished guests. Mr. Speaker, I want to thank you for giving me the profound honor of addressing this great citadel of democracy for the fourth time. We meet today at a crossroads of history. Our world is in upheaval. In the Middle East, Iran's axis of terror confronts America, Israel, and our Arab friends. This is not a clash of civilizations. It's a clash between barbarism and civilization. It's a clash between those who glorify death and those who sanctify life. For the forces of civilization to triumph, America and Israel must stand together. Because when we stand together, something very simple happens. We win, they lose. And my friends, I came to assure you today of one thing. We will win. Ladies and gentlemen, like December 7th, 1941, and September 11th, 2001, October 7th is a day that will forever live in infamy. It was the Jewish holiday of Simchat Torah. It began as a perfect day, not a cloud in the sky. Thousands of young Israelis were celebrating at an outdoor music festival, and suddenly, at 6:29 a.m., as children were still sleeping soundly in their beds in the towns and kibbutzim next to Gaza, suddenly heaven turned into hell. 3,000 Hamas terrorists stormed into Israel. They butchered 1,200 people from 41 countries, including 39 Americans. Proportionately, compared to our population size, that's like 29 11s in one day. And these monsters, they raped women, they beheaded men, they burnt babies alive, they killed parents in front of their children, and children in front of their parents. They dragged 255 people, both living and dead, into the dark dungeons of Gaza. Israel has already brought home 135 of these hostages, including seven who were freed in daring rescue operations. One of those freed hostages, Noor Gamani, is here in the gallery, sitting near my wife, Sarah. On the morning of October 7th, the entire world saw Noah's look of desperation as she was violently abducted to Gaza on the back of a motorcycle. I met Noah's mother, Leora, a few months ago. She was dying of cancer. She said to me, "Prime Minister, I have one final wish. I wish to hug my daughter, Noah, one last time before I die." 2 months ago, I authorized a breathtaking commando rescue operation. Our special forces, including a heroic officer named Arnon Zmora, who fell in this battle, rescued Noah and three other hostages. Noah, I think it's one of the most moving things. When Noah was reunited with her mother, Leora, and her mother's last wish came true. Noah, we're so thrilled to have you with us today. Thank you. Many hostage families are also here with us today, including Eliyahu Bibas. Eliyahu Bibas is the grandfather of those two beautiful red-headed boys, the Bibas boys, toddlers. And they were taken hostage with their mother and Eliyahu's son. The entire family was taken hostage. Two beautiful red-haired children taken hostage. What monsters. And with us also is Iris Chaim, whose son, Yotam, bravely escaped Hamas captivity with two other Israelis, and tragically they were killed, making their way back to our lines. We have with us also the families of American hostages. They're here. The pain these families have endured is beyond words. I met with them again yesterday, and I promised them this: I will not rest until all their loved ones are home, all of them. As we speak, we're actively engaged in intensive efforts to secure their release, and I'm confident that these efforts can succeed. Some of them are taking place right now. I want to thank President Biden for his tireless efforts on behalf of the hostages and for his efforts to the hostage families as well. I thank President Biden for his heartfelt support for Israel after the savage attack on October 7th. He rightly called Hamas sheer evil. He dispatched two aircraft carriers to the Middle East to deter a wider war. And he came to Israel to stand with us during our darkest hour, a visit that will never be forgotten. President Biden and I have known each other for over 40 years. I want to thank him for half a century of friendship to Israel and for being, as he says, a proud Zionist. Actually, he says a proud Irish-American Zionist. My friends, for more than 9 months, Israel's soldiers have shown boundless courage. With us today, is Lieutenant Avichael Reuven. Avichael is an officer in the Israeli paratroopers. His family immigrated to Israel from Ethiopia. In the early hours of October 7th, Avichael heard the news of Hamas's bloody rampage. He put on his uniform, grabbed his rifle, but he didn't have a car. So he ran 8 miles to the front lines of Gaza to defend his people. You heard that right. He ran 8 miles, came to the front lines, killed many terrorists, and saved many, many lives. Avichael, we all honor your remarkable heroism. Another Israeli is with us here today, and he's standing up right next to Avichael. This is Master Sergeant Ashraf al-Bakhiri. Ashraf is a Bedouin soldier from the Israeli Muslim community of Ra'at. On October 7th, Ashraf too killed many terrorists. First, he defended his comrades in the military base, and he then rushed to defend the neighboring communities, including the devastated community of Kibbutz Be'eri. Like Ashraf, the Muslim soldiers of the IDF fought alongside their Jewish, Druze, Christian, and other comrades in arms with tremendous bravery. A third hero, Lieutenant Asa Sofer, is also here with us. Asa fought as an officer in the tank corps, and he was wounded in battle. While protecting his fellow soldiers from a grenade, he lost his right arm and the vision in his left eye. He's recovering, and incredibly, within a short time, Asa will soon return to active duty as a commander of a tank company. I just learned there is a fourth hero here, Lieutenant Jonathan Ben Chamo, who lost a leg in Gaza and continued to fight. My friends, these are the soldiers of Israel, unbowed, undaunted, unafraid. As the Bible says, Am kelavi yakum. They shall rise like lions. They have risen like lions. The lions of Judah, the lions of Israel. Ladies and gentlemen, the men and women of the IDF come from every corner of Israeli society, every ethnicity, every color, every creed, left and right, religious and secular. All are imbued with the indomitable spirit of the Maccabees, the legendary Jewish warriors of antiquity. With us today is Yechiel Leiter, the father of one of those Maccabees. Yechiel's father escaped the Holocaust and found refuge in America. As a young man, Yechiel moved to Israel and raised a family of 8 children. He named his eldest son, Moshe, after his late father. Moshe became an exemplary officer in one of our elite commando units. He served with distinction for 2 decades while raising 6 beautiful children of his own. On October 7th, Moshe volunteered to return to combat. 4 weeks later, he was killed when a booby-trapped mine exploded in a tunnel shaft right next to a mosque. At his son's funeral, Yechiel said this: "If the state of Israel had not been established after the Holocaust, the image engraved in our collective memory would have been the photograph of that helpless Jewish boy in the Warsaw ghetto holding his hands up in the air with Nazi rifles pointed at him. But because of the birth of Israel," Yechiel continued, "because of the courage of soldiers like my son Moshe, the Jewish people are no longer helpless in the face of our enemies." Yechiel, please rise so we can honor your son's sacrifice. And I pledge to you and to all the bereaved families of Israel, some of whom are in this hall today, the sacrifice of your loved ones will not be in vain. It will not be vain, because for Israel, never again must never be an empty promise. It must always remain a sacred vow. And after October 7th, never again is now. My friends, defeating our brutal enemies requires both courage and clarity. Clarity begins by knowing the difference between good and evil. Yet incredibly, many anti-Israel protesters, many choose to stand with evil. They stand with Hamas. They stand with rapists and murderers. They stand with people who came into the kibbutzim, into a home. The parents hid the children, the 2 babies, in the attic, in a secret attic. They murdered the families, the parents. They found the secret latch to the hidden attic, and then they murder the babies. These protesters stand with them. They should be ashamed of themselves. They refuse to make the simple distinction between those who target terrorists and those who target civilians, between the democratic state of Israel and the terrorist thugs of Hamas. We recently learned from the National Security Director, U.S. Director of National Intelligence, that Iran is funding and promoting anti-Israel protests in America. They want to disrupt America. So these protesters burn American flags even on the 4th of July. And I wish to salute the fraternity brothers at the University of North Carolina who protected the American flag against these anti-Israel protesters. For all we know, Iran is funding the anti-Israel protests that are going on right now outside this building. Not that many, but they're there and throughout the city. Well, I have a message for these protesters. When the tyrants of Tehran, who hang gays from cranes and murder women for not covering their hair, are praising, promoting, and funding you, you have officially become Iran's useful idiots. Some of these protesters, it's amazing, absolutely amazing. Some of these protesters hold up signs proclaiming gays for Gaza. They might as well hold up signs saying chickens for KFC. These protesters chant from the river to the sea, but many don't have a clue what river and what sea they're talking about. They not only get an F in geography, they get an F in history. They call Israel a colonialist state? Don't they know that the land of Israel is where Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob prayed, where Isaiah and Jeremiah preached, and where David and Solomon ruled? For nearly 4,000 years, the land of Israel has been the homeland of the Jewish people. It's always been our home. It will always be our home. It's not only the campus protesters who get it wrong. It's also the people who run those campuses. 80 years after the Holocaust, the presidents of Harvard, Penn, and I'm ashamed to say my alma mater, MIT, couldn't bring themselves to condemn the calls for the genocide of Jews. You remember what they said? They said, "It depends on the context." Well, let me give these befuddled academics a little context. Anti-Semitism is the world's oldest hatred. For centuries, the massacre of Jews was always preceded by wild accusations. We were accused of everything from poisoning wells to spreading plagues, to using the blood of slaughtered children to bake Passover matzahs. These preposterous anti-Semitic lies led to persecution, mass murder, and ultimately to history's worst genocide, the Holocaust. Now, just as malicious lies were leveled for centuries at the Jewish people, malicious lies are now being leveled at the Jewish state. No, no, don't applaud. Listen. The outrageous slanders that paint Israel as racist and genocidal are meant to delegitimize Israel, to demonize the Jewish state, and to demonize Jews everywhere. And no wonder, no wonder we've witnessed an appalling rise of anti-Semitism in America and around the world. My friends, whenever and wherever we see the scourge of anti-Semitism, we must unequivocally condemn it and resolutely fight it, without exception.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, you're listening to Benjamin Netanyahu. We're about halfway through his speech to a joint session of Congress. Pretty stunning stuff, right? You know, and what he's talking about there is how Israel values life. He's talked about that. And that's one of the many things that Christians have in common, besides we have the same God. They just don't recognize Jesus. But the whole idea of the sanctity of life is continuous throughout both expressions of faith. And so that's why this is a good time to remind you that our way here in this country, I don't know if there is a preborn in Israel, is to help preborn supply ultrasounds to moms in crisis pregnancy. It's a brilliant way to stop abortion and save lives. If you would like to help, and I hope that you do, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
And don't be fooled when the blood libels against the Jewish state come from people who wear fancy silk robes and speak in lofty tones about law and justice. Here's a case in point. The prosecutor of the International Criminal Court has shamefully accused Israel of deliberately starving the people of Gaza. This is utter, complete nonsense. It's a complete fabrication. Israel has enabled more than 40,000 aid trucks to enter Gaza. That's 500,000 tons of food, and that's more than 3,000 calories for every man, woman, and child in Gaza. If there are Palestinians in Gaza who aren't getting enough food, it's not because Israel is blocking it, it's because Hamas is stealing it. So much for that lie, but here's another. The ICC prosecutor accuses Israel of deliberately targeting civilians. What in God's green earth is he talking about? The IDF has dropped millions of flyers, sent millions of text messages, made hundreds of thousands of phone calls to get Palestinian civilians out of harm's way. But at the same time, Hamas does everything in its power to put Palestinian civilians in harm's way. They fire rockets from schools, from hospitals, from mosques. They even shoot their own people when they try to leave the war zone. A senior Hamas official, Fathi Hamad, boasted, listen to this, he boasted that Palestinian women and children excel at being human shields. His words, excel at being human shields. What monstrous evil. For Israel, every civilian death is a tragedy. For Hamas, it's a strategy. They actually want Palestinian civilians to die so that Israel will be smeared in the international media and be pressured to end the war before it's won. This would enable Hamas to survive another day, and as they vowed, to carry out October 7th again and again and again. Well, I want to assure you, no matter what pressure is brought to bear, I will never allow that to happen. The vast majority of Americans have not fallen for this Hamas propaganda. They continue to support Israel. And I want to say thank you, America, and thank you, senators and House members, who continue to support us, continue to support Israel, continue to support the truth and see through the lies. But as for the minority that may have fallen for Hamas's cons job, I suggest you listen to Colonel John Spencer. John Spencer is head of urban warfare studies at West Point. He studied every major urban conflict, I was going to say in modern history. He corrected me, no, in history. Israel, he said, has implemented more precautions to prevent civilian harm than any military in history and beyond what international law requires. That's why, despite all the lies you've heard, the war in Gaza has one of the lowest ratios of combatants to non-combatants casualties in the history of urban warfare. And you want to know where it's lowest in Gaza? It's lowest in Rafah. In Rafah. Remember what so many people said? If Israel goes into Rafah, there'll be thousands, maybe even tens of thousands of civilians killed. Well, last week, I went into Rafah. I visited our troops as they finished fighting Hamas's remaining terrorist battalions. I asked the commander there, how many terrorists did you take out in Rafah? He gave me an exact number, 1,203. I asked him, how many civilians were killed? He said, Prime Minister, practically none, with the exception of a single incident where shrapnel from a bomb hit a Hamas weapons depot and unintentionally killed 24 people. The answer is practically none. You want to know why? Because Israel got the civilians out of harm's way, something people said we could never do, but we did it. These heroes here today, the heroic soldiers of Israel, should not be condemned for how they're conducting the war in Gaza. They should be commended for it. I want to thank all of you here today who forcefully opposed the false accusations of the ICC and stood up for the truth These lies are not only libelous, they're downright dangerous. The ICC is trying to shackle Israel's hands and prevent us from defending ourselves. And if Israel's hands are tied, America is next. And I'll tell you what else is next. The ability of all democracies to fight terrorism will be imperiled. That's what's on the line. So let me assure you, the hands of the Jewish state will never be shackled. Israel will always defend itself. My friends, in the Middle East, Iran is virtually behind all the terrorism, all the turmoil, all the chaos, all the killing. And that should come as no surprise. When he founded the Islamic Republic, Ayatollah Khomeini pledged, "We will export our revolution to the entire world. We will export the Islamic revolution to the entire world." Now ask yourself, which country ultimately stands in the way of Iran's maniacal plans to impose radical Islam on the world? And the answer is clear. It's America, the guardian of Western civilization and the world's greatest power. That's why Iran sees America as its greatest enemy. Last month, we heard a revealing comment, ostensibly about the war in Gaza, but about something else. It came from the foreign minister of Iran's proxy, Hezbollah, and he said this: "This is not a war with Israel. Israel," he said, "is merely a tool. The main war, the real war, is with America." Iran's regime has been fighting America from the moment it came to power. In 1979, it stormed the American embassy. It held scores of Americans hostage for 444 days. Since then, Iran's terrorist proxies have targeted America in the Middle East and beyond. In Beirut, they killed 241 U.S. servicemen. In Africa, they bombed American embassies. In Iraq, they supplied explosives to maim and kill thousands of American soldiers. In America, they actually sent death squads. They sent death squads here to murder a former Secretary of State and a former National Security Advisor. And as we recently learned, they even brazenly threatened to assassinate President Trump. But Iran understands that to truly challenge America, it must first conquer the Middle East. And for this, it uses its many proxies, including the Houthis, Hezbollah, and Hamas. Yet in the heart of the Middle East, standing in Iran's way, is one proud pro-American democracy, my country, the State of Israel. That's why the mobs in Tehran chant death to Israel before they chant death to America. For Iran, Israel is first, America is next. So when Israel fights Hamas, we're fighting Iran. When we fight Hezbollah, we're fighting Iran. When we fight the Houthis, we're fighting Iran. And when we fight Iran, we're fighting the most radical and murderous enemy of the United States of America. And one more thing. When Israel acts to prevent Iran from developing nuclear weapons that could destroy Israel and threaten every American city, every city that you come from, we're not only protecting ourselves, we're protecting you. My friends, if you remember one thing from the speech, remember this. Our enemies are your enemies. Our fight is your fight. And our victory will be your victory. Ladies and gentlemen, that victory is in sight. Israel's defeat of Hamas will be a powerful blow to Iran's axis of terror. Another part of that axis, Hezbollah, attacked Israel on October 8th, a day after the Hamas attack. It has launched thousands of missiles and drones against us. 80,000 of our citizens in northern Israel evacuated their homes, becoming effectively refugees in their own land. We are committed to returning them home. We prefer to achieve this diplomatically. But let me be clear. Israel will do whatever it must do to restore security to our northern border and return our people safely to their homes. Last Friday, a third Iranian proxy, the Houthis, attacked Tel Aviv with a deadly drone. It exploded a few hundred feet from the American consulate, killing one person and injuring nine. On Saturday, I authorized a swift response to that attack. All our enemies should know this. Those who attack Israel will pay a very heavy price. And as we defend ourselves, on all fronts, I know that America has our back. And I thank you for it. All sides of the aisle, thank you. My friends, for decades, America has provided Israel with generous military assistance, and a grateful Israel has provided America with critical intelligence that saved many lives. We've jointly developed some of the most sophisticated weapons on Earth. I choose my words carefully. We've jointly developed some of the most sophisticated weapons on Earth that help protect both our countries. And we help keep Americans' boots off the ground while protecting our shared interests in the Middle East. I deeply appreciate America's support, including in this current war. But this is an exceptional moment. Fast-tracking U.S. military aid can dramatically expedite an end to the war in Gaza and help prevent a broader war in the Middle East. In World War II, as Britain fought on the front lines of civilization, Winston Churchill appealed to Americans with these famous words, "Give us the tools and we'll finish the job." Today, as Israel fights on the front line of civilization, I too appeal to America. Give us the tools faster and we'll finish the job faster. My dear friends, the war in Gaza could end tomorrow if Hamas surrenders, disarms, and returns all the hostages. But if they don't, Israel will fight until we destroy Hamas's military capabilities, end its rule in Gaza, and bring all our hostages home. That's what total victory means, and we will settle for nothing less. The day after we defeat Hamas, a new Gaza can emerge. My vision for that day is of a demilitarized and de-radicalized Gaza. Israel does not seek to resettle Gaza, but for the foreseeable future, we must retain overriding security control there to prevent the resurgence of terror, to ensure that Gaza never again poses a threat to Israel. Gaza should have a civilian administration run by Palestinians who do not seek to destroy Israel. That's not too much to ask. It's a fundamental thing that we have a right to demand and to receive. A new generation of Palestinians must no longer be taught to hate Jews, but rather to live in peace with us. Those twin words, demilitarization and de-radicalization, those two concepts were applied to Germany and Japan after World War II, and that led to decades of peace, prosperity, and security. Following our victory, with the help of regional partners, the demilitarization and de-radicalization of Gaza can also lead to a future of security, prosperity, and peace. That's my vision for Gaza. Now, here's my vision for the broader Middle East. It's also shaped in part by what we saw in the aftermath of World War II. After that war, America forged a security alliance in Europe to counter the growing Soviet threat. Likewise, America and Israel today can forge a security alliance in the Middle East to counter the growing Iranian threat. All countries that are at peace with Israel and all those countries who will make peace with Israel should be invited to join this alliance. We saw a glimpse of that potential alliance on April 14th. Led by the United States, more than half a dozen nations worked alongside Israel to help neutralize hundreds of missiles and drones launched by Iran against us. Thank you, President Biden, for bringing that coalition together. The new alliance I envision would be a natural extension of the groundbreaking Abraham Accords. Those accords saw peace forged between Israel and four Arab countries, and they were supported by Republicans and Democrats alike. I have a name for this new alliance. I think we should call it the Abraham Alliance. I want to thank President Trump for his leadership in brokering the historic Abraham Accords. Like Americans, Israelis were relieved that President Trump emerged safe and sound from that dastardly attack on American democracy. There is no room for political violence in democracies. I also want to thank President Trump for all the things he did for Israel, from recognizing Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights to confronting Iran's aggression to recognizing Jerusalem as our capital and moving the American embassy there. That's Jerusalem, our eternal capital, never to be divided again. My dear friends, Democrats and Republicans, despite these times of upheaval, I'm hopeful about the future. I'm hopeful about Israel because my people, the Jewish people, emerged from the depths of hell, from dispossession and genocide. And against all odds, we restored our sovereignty in our ancient homeland. We built a powerful and vibrant democracy, a democracy that pushes the boundaries of innovation for the betterment of all humanity. I'm hopeful about America because I'm hopeful about Americans. I know how much the people of this country have sacrificed to defend freedom. America will be continued to be a force for light and good in a dark and dangerous world. For free peoples everywhere, America remains the beacon of liberty, its extraordinary founders envisioned back in 1776. Working together, I'm confident that our two nations will vanquish the tyrants and terrorists who threaten us both. As Israel's Prime Minister, I promise you this. No matter how long it takes, no matter how difficult the road ahead, Israel will not relent, Israel will not bend. We will defend our land, we will defend our people, we will fight until we achieve victory, victory over liberty, rather victory of liberty over tyranny, victory of life over death, victory of good over evil. That's our solemn commitment. And we will continue to work with the United States and our Arab partners to transform a troubled region from a backwater of repression, poverty, and war into a thriving oasis of dignity, prosperity, and peace. In this noble mission, as in many others, Israel will always remain America's indispensable ally. Through thick and thin, through thick and thin, in good times and in bad, Israel will always be your loyal friend and your steadfast partner. On behalf of the people of Israel, I came here today to say thank you, America. Thank you for your support and solidarity. Thank you for standing in Israel, with Israel, in our hour of need. Together, we shall defend our common civilization. Together, we shall secure a brilliant future for both our nations. May God bless Israel, may God bless America, and may God bless the great alliance between Israel and America forever.
Wow. You see what I mean? That's why I wanted you to hear that. He is you know, he's speaking the truth, and it's like so refreshing because we get so much nonsense from our leaders, our so-called leaders, and I thought it was refreshing. And meanwhile, the irony is, while Benjamin Netanyahu is speaking, it's not just the maggots and the crickets being unleashed in the Watergate Hotel and his quarters and his staff's quarters. But outside, there are Palestinian protesters. Now, I watched part of this, and I also knew that the night before there was a missive that went out. Someone sent it to me, certainly in Atlanta, asking for people to come. They were going to drive a bus all the way from Atlanta to Washington, D.C., and protest, and then they would bring them back home. They wouldn't be staying the night. And it was a rah-rah piece about doing this. You know, there are paid protesters now. I think you know that. There are millions of dollars being spent on a whole, you know, they're pop-up protesters. And they have signs that all match each other, and it's all very neat and orchestrated. But that's not all that happened in Washington, because D.C. is surrounded by Muslim Brotherhood Islamists. They live there. One night when I was there, 10,000 Muslim protesters. This was before the Palestinian thing became the tip of the spear. But they showed up in the park across from the Washington, across from the White House, and just raised Cain. And in fact, the handful of Israelis who came, or Jews, American Jews, to do a counter-protest were in danger, and the police had to take them away. So they are there. They've been there since 9/11 and since before. So it wasn't, you know, they didn't have to twist their arm to show up. So these protesters came, and what did they do? Well, they did a lot of things. They spread fake blood all over, right close to the White House. They also defaced Union Station. They went over there, they defaced the replica of the Liberty Bell, painted vulgar remarks on it, like blank Israel, starts with an F, all kinds of things like that. Then they began to chant for Palestine. And these are not, I don't think these are paid protesters, because I think this is more typical to me of Islamic jihadi protesters. They started shouting Allahu Akbar as they were burning the American flag. And that's what they do when they're going into jihad. That's what they do when they kill people. And so I don't think that, you know, George Soros had enough money to pay people to do that, but they did that. I watched it with my own eyes. They burned the American flag. They painted all over a monument that's right out front of Union Station. See, that's very close to the Capitol. And so it was a disgusting display. They also they injured the police, and there weren't enough police there to stop them. So you can see the police like forming little circles with their backs to each other, trying to make it through the crowd. And they asked for reinforcements, and Muriel Bowser and the powers that be in D.C. would not give them. And I heard just today that the protesters, those that were arrested, the handful, have been released. So this is the state of play in our country. This is the state of play. Secret Service not guarding the headquarters, the residence, the home away from home, and the Watergate Hotel, allowing this to take place, and obviously putting Netanyahu and his staff in danger. So with them now we have Kamala Harris. And I said to you before, Kamala refused to preside. It was her job to do that, and she refused to do that. You have to understand that Kamala Harris is very anti-Israel. When the Black Lives Matter protests and the protests of the summer of 2019, 2020, she actually helped raise money for them. And she was all about it, all about Black Lives Matter. Anything, she is more radical than Joe Biden. Joe Biden has joined in the radicalism because that means power for him. But he's not, you know, didn't grow up being a radical jihadi. But Kamala Harris loves everything leftist violence. And so we are moving in a direction that's really not good. So let me tell you, after Kamala refused to preside over that, there was some press release that went out that said she would meet with Netanyahu. And so there's a video of this where she comes and stands next to, they come out of this room, Netanyahu and Vice President Kamala Harris, and she says, like, she just introduces him, ladies and gentlemen, and she has a frown on her face, like angry. This is the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. And then they dismiss the press 14 seconds later, out of the room. So she meets with Benjamin Netanyahu, and then she comes out and makes a statement. And I would be remiss, really, if I didn't. This is the full story coming complete here. This is the vice president, now presidential candidate for 2024, her response to Benjamin Netanyahu.
500,000 people facing catastrophic levels of acute food insecurity. What has happened in Gaza over the past 9 months is devastating. The images of dead children and desperate, hungry people fleeing for safety, sometimes displaced for the second, third, or fourth time. We cannot look away in the face of these tragedies. We cannot allow ourselves to become numb to the suffering, and I will not be silent. Thanks to the leadership of our President Joe Biden, there is a deal on the table for a ceasefire and a hostage deal. And it is important that we recall what the deal involves. The first phase of the deal would bring about a full ceasefire, including a withdrawal of the Israeli military from population centers in Gaza. In the second phase, the Israeli military would withdraw from Gaza entirely, and it would lead to a permanent end to the hostilities. It is time for this war to end, and end in a way where Israel is secure, all the hostages are released, the suffering of Palestinians in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can exercise their right to freedom, dignity, and self-determination. There has been hopeful movement in the talks to secure an agreement on this deal. And as I just told Prime Minister Netanyahu, it is time to get this deal done. So to everyone who has been calling for a ceasefire, and to everyone who yearns for peace, I see you and I hear you. Let's get the deal done so we can get a ceasefire to end the war. Let's bring the hostages home, and let's provide much needed relief to the Palestinian people. And ultimately, I remain committed to a path forward that can lead to a two-state solution. And I know right now it is hard to conceive of that prospect, but a two-state solution is the only path that ensures Israel remains a secure Jewish and democratic state, and one that ensures Palestinians can finally realize the freedom, security, and prosperity that they rightly deserve.
Okay, well, I could say a lot about that, but it's not the time to do that. I wanted you to hear her response. Her response is all Hamas all the time. She knows that Israel cannot exist near as a neighbor to a group of people that want them annihilated. But she doesn't talk about that. So she's all sympathetic to Hamas, doesn't mention what they did. Okay, I'll let that stand. I wanted you to hear who, you know, what our maybe heir apparent president is going to be in 2024 and how she stands on the issue of the nation of Israel. Well, I want to thank you for listening today. You know, you can call us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on all podcast platforms. We want to thank our sponsors. Certainly, Timothy Plan is our new sponsor. You can put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/sandy. That's timothyplan.com/sandy or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening today. I appreciate it so much, and you can leave us your comments. These shows have been a little bit longer, I know that, but we've had such major events this week, and I wanted you to be fully prepared and fully informed, so that's what I'm committed to doing until I can't do it anymore. So thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.